And a very good afternoon to you. The time is 12:07, and you're tuned to Midday Matters right here on 89.1 FM. I'm Sean Beter. Very happy to be with you on this Monday afternoon. And with me in studio, as usual, it's Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel. Bob, thanks very much for coming in today.
Thanks, Sean. All of us could barely tear ourselves away from this productivity-busting spring day in December.
But, that's right. It's 60-some-odd degrees, and we're grateful that you're with us this hour. Today we're going to be talking, as you heard in the billboard, about poverty and hunger in northeastern Indiana and across the state of Indiana, of course. And we want to hear your questions and comments, or perhaps you have a personal story, personal experience with us. Join the conversation today. Be a part of it. 260-452-1185. Of course, you can always call us toll-free at 1-800-471-9264. Email middaymatters at nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall. That's facebook.com/middaymatters, or you can always send us a tweet as well. Joining us in studio for this hour of the program, we have Ann Helmke, director of Vincent Village. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Sean.
And joining us by phone, it's Matt Bell. He's now the president of Ivy Tech Corporate College, formerly the head of the Regional Chamber of Northeastern Indiana, and also a former Indiana State Legislator as well. Mr. Bell, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be with you today.
Now, Matt, I want to start with you. Folks may be wondering why we called you in on this issue, but Bob Kaler and I were talking in preparation for this program, and this is poverty and hunger in our region and in Indiana, really one of your big personal issues.
You know, it is, and I've had a great opportunity to really learn a lot about the face of hunger through working with Community Harvest Food Bank in Fort Wayne, and I feel very fortunate to have had that opportunity, continue to serve on the board there in support of a phenomenal staff led by our executive director, Jane Avery. But, you know, to me, as concerned and active members of our community, whatever positive change it is that we want to see, if we want to see a better educated Northeast Indiana, if we want to see a more economically prosperous Northeast Indiana, if we want to see a healthier Northeast Indiana, all of those have a foundation in this issue of hunger and poverty. So I think it's incredibly important that we keep a community focus there. This time of the year, certainly, the awareness is heightened, but the fact is that hunger is not just seasonal. It certainly affects our community 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and 365 days a year.
And there, you brought up a whole host of issues that I want to chat about a little more in depth as the show goes on here. But Ann Helmke, though, I want to ask you, about your interest in this, and tell us a little bit about Vincent Village and your role in it.
Well, actually, organization that I serve goes one step further than hunger, because the people that we serve are homeless, they're families with children, and it's hard to meet your needs, your hunger needs, when you have no place to call home, or you're moving from place to place. And the families that we see, have poor nutrition. I do want to let Matt know that we are a member agency of Community Harvest Food Bank, and a lot of our food and commodities come from there, which is a big help for our organization.
Well, I tell you, the member agencies of Community Harvest Food Bank just do amazing work, and it's really a credit to the system that we've developed locally and really been recognized for nationally, that a food bank can support a number of wonderful member agencies and help them perform their mission more efficiently.
And Helmke, can you talk just a little bit about how many folks you've served in this community over the course of Vincent Village's operation?
Well, we've been open since December 18th, 1989. We serve an average of about 35 homeless families a year. Our organization has developed a housing program, affordable housing program. Excuse me. Families can come into the shelter, start getting on their feet, and then move into one of our houses. We have 32 houses that are between Colerick Street and Pontiac Street on Holton and Reed, so they encircle what was a former Catholic Church campus, which is now a community center, and the convent is the shelter and can house up to 12 families at a time.
I want to get an idea before we move on here, and Matt Belper, perhaps you can chime in of the depth of this and the breadth of this issue in our state. I believe the last numbers that came out, poverty rate in Indiana, roughly 16%. I think in Allen County, it's round about 14. But this is much bigger than just that number. I mean, you have folks who may not be at the poverty line, Matt Belper, but certainly many more who are struggling to get by.
We sure do. So on an average week at Community Harvest Food Bank, we'll see an estimated 21,100 different people who receive food from us. Annually, that equates to about 90,000 folks who receive food from Community Harvest Food Bank. We do that in part through our 430 member agencies, much like Ann's organization today. But let me give you a sense of who it is that we're serving. The typical demographic that we see in Community Harvest Food Bank is a single woman who's the head of a household. She will have, on average, 2 to 3 children, at least one under the age of 5. She works. She's employed at least 30 hours a week, has earned her high school diploma, and votes as a registered voter. On average, she tends to be a Caucasian woman. She is not typically on food stamps, either because her income doesn't qualify, she earns slightly too much money in order to feed her family effectively, or societal reasons, you know, not wanting to sign up for the program because of pride, or perhaps she only needs help 1 or 2 times a year. So the challenge is deep. When we parlay that to a state impact, and we look at the total impact, lost productivity, health, and medical costs associated with both obesity and hunger, the cost in Indiana is about $1.9 billion annually to deal with the effects of hunger. So it's a staggering, staggering issue for our state. In the nation, that's about a $66.8 billion cost associated with hunger and hunger-related illness. Certainly one that is a paradox, right? Because we live in wonderful, fertile land of plenty. And yet there are folks among us in each of our neighborhoods for whom hunger is a reality each and every day.
We're talking about poverty and hunger in northeastern Indiana and across the state on this edition of Midday Matters. And we want to invite our listeners to join the conversation. The number is 260-452-1185 if you have a question or comment for our panelists today. Of course, you can always call us toll-free at 1-800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet, Bob Kaler.
You touch on something that I'm particularly interested in figuring out about this is I think that people may concentrate a little too much on the actual poverty figure and not enough on what I think of as people who are near poor, between the poverty line and twice the poverty line income for a household. I think that total figure would be 40 to 50% of the population would be in households that would fall within 200% of the poverty line. And it sounds like an awful lot of the people that use Community Harvest to plug a gap in their necessities are in that from poverty line to twice poverty line. Is that your impression, or can you not really speak to that through the information that Community Harvest has?
No, I think that's exactly right. You know, and you know, particularly over the last few years, as we've withstood, you know, a severe economic downturn, we've seen folks who are recently and almost immediately unemployed who are first-time food bank users. There are so many families, not only in Northeast Indiana but across the state and nationally, certainly as well, who tend to live have to live paycheck to paycheck. When that income stream is interrupted, be it by a medical expense, be it by, you know, continued increases in gas prices, be it by any number of events, those folks find themselves in need of food, in need of food to feed their children, in need of food to try to ensure the health and well-being of their family. And that's where a community harvest food bank really plays just an incredible role in the fabric of a community. It's making sure that we can support those folks in their time of need without enrolling them in a government program, without having them fit boxes on a page that have been predetermined by agencies hundreds and hundreds of miles away and may or may not bear any real resemblance to the challenges folks face in Northeast Indiana.
And Ann Helmke, I see you nodding throughout a lot of what Matt's saying here.
Yes, I typically agree with Matt about the. Of course, we don't see families that are at 200% of poverty. We see families that are below poverty level, some with no income. But the typical family that we see is a single mom with two or three children. So when you think about an organization that serves homeless families, our primary population are children. And children, homeless children, when they are compared to housed children living in poverty, fare far worse in every developmental category that there is in terms of moving forward, being ready for school, performance in school. Their health is compromised much more than housed children living in poverty. Hunger is just one of the issues with homeless children, but how it impacts our kids, the whole problem of homelessness is devastating to children.
And in fact, when you look at say figures like free and reduced lunch, even just here in the Fort Wayne Community School System, you're looking at roughly 70% of those children involved in that program. I do need to take a break here, but we'll continue the conversation when we get back in just a few moments. And we do want to hear from our listeners this hour. If you have volunteered with organizations that work with those in need, we want to hear from you. Also, if you have a personal story you'd like to share or a question or comment for Ann Helmke or Matt Bell, give us a call. The number is 260-452-1185. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet. Stay with us. This is Midday Matters.
Irish writer Colm Tobin, author of the bestseller Brooklyn, has a new novel which imagines Mary remembering her son Jesus 20 years after his crucifixion. On the next Fresh Air, we'll talk with Colm Tobin about his book, growing up Catholic in Ireland, being gay, and writing about what's left unsaid. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
This week, it's two natives of the Texas Gulf Coast. First guitar slinger Johnny Winter of Beaumont, talking about his youth and milestones in the blues. Then Houston pianist Jason Moran, who found his way to jazz from classical through Thelonious Monk. All that in a honky-tonk jukebox. I'm Nick Spitzer. Join me for American Roots from PRX.
Monday night at 7 on WBOI.
Parents could routinely determine their child's entire genetic blueprint at birth, but do they want to?
Do we wait until she's a specific age and say, oh, by the way, we have all of your DNA, you know, do you want to see what doctors have found, or do we keep that to ourselves?
The dilemmas of genome sequencing for newborns, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's weekdays starting at 4 on WBOI Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
It's believed that most young Americans infected by HIV don't know it. Now the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force wants a routine HIV test for every American between the ages of 15 and 65. Some worry, though, about the cost, others about privacy. I'm Neil Cunnan, routine screenings for HIV, plus our weekly read of the opinion page. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Tune in weekdays at 2 here on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
It's 12:21, and you're tuned to Midday Matters here on WBOI 89.1 FM. I'm Sean Beter, along with Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel. And on today's program, we're talking poverty and hunger in northeastern Indiana and across the state. And we want to hear from you today. If you have a question or comment, perhaps a personal story to share, please do get in touch and be a part of the conversation. The number, it's 260-452-1185, or you can always call toll-free at 1-800-471-9264. You can always email us, of course, middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet. It's at Midday Matters. Joining us in studio today, it's Ann Helmke, director of Vincent Village, and Matt Bell, president of Ivy Tech Corporate College, and a member of the board at Community Harvest Food Bank. And thanks again to you both for joining us for this program today. We set the table, so to speak, in the first part of the program here. And Ann Helmke, I want to turn to you. We mentioned that a lot of children, especially in Fort Wayne Community Schools, are receiving free and reduced price lunch. They're a part of that program. But this extends back even further to families sometimes who've been impoverished for generations, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
And you were talking about how important it is to keep those families together when you're tackling this really difficult issue of homelessness.
Exactly. We are one of the we're the only transitional program in Fort Wayne with the philosophy of keeping families together during the crisis of homelessness. So if it's a mom, a dad, and kids, we don't make the dad go somewhere else. I was just telling Sean we had a Whitley County because we serve the greater Fort Wayne area. Mostly because there's few resources in the rural areas. Whitley County had called with a single dad. I believe he has four or five kids. And so we are, our philosophy really is to help the family get on their feet and get into housing as quickly as possible. We don't try to keep them in the shelter any longer than it takes to help them find a job, establish some kind of income, and be able to pay some rent to move into. The unique thing about Vincent Village is, even though we're not subsidized with government funds, is that we charge rent according to what the family makes. So if they have a job making minimum wage, they can afford the house that they move into.
And it does seem like it could be an additional challenge, though, when you're looking at trying to break this cycle.
Mm-hmm.
You're dealing with many more people than a single person who may not have the resources to get an apartment or to even feed themselves. You're dealing with an entire family, and that necessarily takes a lot more resources.
Exactly. In addition to the employment market, childcare is a huge issue for us.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, we have childcare right on our campus, and we're able to help some of the families with childcare.
We'll talk a little more about that issue. I mean, the importance of childcare to folks who may need to get to work, but they can't take their child with them, things like that.
Well, for a mom that's got two or three kids, with one of them being under the age of three, like Matt said, or maybe a school-age child and a preschool child, she's going three different directions trying to find adequate childcare. And it's really important to get these young kids, especially the preschool kids, into early learning centers because they have been so traumatized and their development has been impacted by homelessness, hunger, and all the issues that go along with extreme poverty. They're in extreme poverty.
Mm-hmm. And Matt Bell, this sounds like it's right in line with your description of the average person who comes to the Community Harvest Food Bank.
You know, it really does. Almost 40%, 39% of the clients we've served at Community Harvest Food Bank had to choose between paying for food and paying for transportation, to Ann's point. Families find ways to survive. And it's because of amazing organizations like Vincent Village that they're able to approach those families to help them maintain their dignity. You know, that's a core value for Community Harvest Food Bank as well, and that's to respect the dignity of the clients that we serve. Like Ann, we are not a governmental agency. We're not a sectarian agency. You know, we exist really by the will of our community, supported by donors throughout our community, because they recognize that there are neighbors, that there are people in every community in our region who regularly say, you know, am I going to feed my family this month? Am I going to pay rent? Am I going to be able to buy the medicine I need? In some cases, medicine that is incredibly important to the ability to function in society, or am I going to feed my family? And that's an amazingly difficult position to put someone in. So when organizations like Community Harvest Food Bank, Vincent Village can step up, we strengthen the fiber of Northeast Indiana. You know, Ann talked about the difficulty that living in extreme poverty, dealing with homelessness, and certainly hunger have on the educational development of a child, and she very, very rightly focused on the importance of early childhood education. But, you know, John C. Cook did a study called Child Food Insecurity, the impact, economic impact on our nation. And what he found was that those impacts don't simply affect a child, they extend into adulthood. Because adults who experienced hunger, according to Dr. Cook, as children, are not well prepared mentally, emotionally, physically, or socially to perform in a contemporary work environment. That child hunger leads to greater absenteeism and turnover in the workforce. And that workers who experience hunger as children create a work pool that's less competitive, with lower levels of education and technical skills, and seriously constrained human capital. So, you know, we're not the problem that Ann and Vincent Village address, the support the Community Harvest Food Bank tries to provide, doesn't simply meet a need today. It lays a foundation for a brighter future for the individual and for our community.
It looks like we have a caller on the line here. And of course, we invite our listeners to join the conversation today. If you have a personal story, maybe a question or comment for our panelists today, we do want to hear from you. The number 260-452-1185, or you can call us toll free at 1-800-471-9264. Let's open the phones and go to David. David, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for being with us today. Go ahead, please.
I just wanted to call in and let any interested parties know that I'm with the local organization Fort Wayne Food Not Bombs, and every Sunday at 2 o'clock we're down in Fryman Square sharing food and materials with all interested parties, including the homeless members of our community, in an effort to promote peace and a more cooperative society.
And can you report just a bit, David, on attendance? Are folks taking advantage of the opportunity?
Yeah, we always have at least a handful of people down there sharing meals with us, and a large number of them do happen to be homeless individuals.
All right. Well, David, thanks very much for the bulletin. We appreciate the call.
Thank you.
All right. Have a very good day. The number to join the conversation, it's 260-452-1185. If you want to share a good organization in town that may be able to help folks in our listening area, or if you have a personal story, perhaps a question or a comment for our panelists today. I'm curious, and this is a question for both of you. Perhaps we'll start with you, Matt. You know, a lot of folks in the past 4 or 5 years have been hit extraordinarily hard by the economic downturn. I think I heard a number of 40% of net worth, you know, for an average middle income family, down the drain. Are folks who are coming to Community Harvest, folks that you've heard, you know, taking advantage of organizations like that, is this a first time thing, a traumatic event, basically pushing them over the brink, or is it more of a chronic issue, or is it both?
You know, I think there is a combination there, Sean, and I will tell you that over the last few years, it has not been a rarity for us to find clients at Community Harvest Food Bank who were formerly donors. folks who had the means at one point to support this important activity in Northeast Indiana, and through the economic downturn now find themselves needing to access that need. So certainly there are many folks, and too many folks, who have been pushed to a different economic position that doesn't enable them to provide adequately for their family, and that's why this is such an important organization, and our partners, more than 430 across the region, provide such an important service. But historically, we'll give you just a little bit of perspective. Community Harvest Food Bank was founded 30 years ago. Next year, we'll celebrate our 30th anniversary in Northeast Indiana. And it was founded immediately to deal with meeting the need that resulted from the job loss when Harvester left Fort Wayne. And the vision of community leaders then was, you know, we believe this is going to be a very short-term fixed activity. And really the horizon was less than 3 years that we would need to have an organization prepared to meet that need. 30 years later, we're serving 21,100 unique people each week. You know, in some ways, we're a victim of our own success when it comes to hunger. You know, we turn on the TV and we see commercials of underdeveloped nations, and we see children suffering from malnutrition, and we see folks standing in line waiting for a bit of rice, waiting for a bit of food. Well, that's not what we see in Northeast Indiana and Indiana and across our nation. We do a great job of just masking this issue and keeping it right under the radar. But as I said at the beginning, hunger is an issue that affects people and families and communities every day of the year, at all hours.
Ann Helmke, I want to put the same question to you. I mean, folks who Vincent Village serves, is this a chronic issue? Is this a sudden economic trauma that's befallen their family? Is it both?
Actually, it's both. Each family brings a unique set of circumstances through our door. We don't focus on any one particular social problem. We see people who are during the recent recession, a family who the father was a truck driver, the company went bankrupt. He had a lot of medical problems then because of stress, and he had a stroke, and it was kind of a real downhill for them. They lost their house. Most of the time, it's generational poverty. We see people who grew up in poverty, and really one of the basic things that we concentrate on is improving their marketable skills. Help each family develop an action plan for self-sufficiency that meets their needs. We have a small fund that we can help them get short-term certifications like a CNA, a welding certification, or something along those lines to help them get going. Our goal is to move them to higher levels of self-sufficiency. We continue to work with families after they leave us, when they go into Vincent Village, or even when they move into other housing. I love to say, you know, that our success rate is pretty high if a family moves from Vincent House into Vincent Village or into Pathways to Success, which is a program that serves families moving out of any shelter but move out into the community somewhere. They have a much higher rate of success if they complete that transitional program, that action plan, and they move into, and we have families that have gone from living in their van to owning their own home.
Hmm. I'm curious. Did you see a spike in requests for assistance around about the time 2008? Let's say around about when the downturn started.
We had as many as 60 families on waiting to get into a shelter during that period. Our average waiting list is between 20 and 35 families. Hmm. It just depends on, you know, how. Families that are homeless are desperate and they need to find some place. A lot of times when we have an space open up, we go to the next person on the list, and we either can't find them or they've found other housing type or shelter somewhere. So,
you know, Sean, I think this is a great illustration too of how well not-for-profit organizations in Northeast Indiana collaborate and support the mission of one another. So so for Ann's organization to be able to do all the very meaningful things that they do for families at the success rate that they do, How wonderful is it that there is a world-class food bank who can help provide food to that member agency so that they can focus their resources really on helping that family transition from their current economic situation to something that improves their lot. And you know, we do that with more than 400 agencies across the region. And I think it's a great example of the ways in which not-for-profit organizations have also responded to this economic downturn, and that's in finding and deepening relationships amongst ourselves, finding ways that we can do and provide our mission while enabling others to provide theirs. And it's something that I think we can all be very, very proud of in Northeast Indiana.
We do need to take a quick break for the news here, but we'll continue the discussion on poverty, hunger, and homelessness in northeastern Indiana when we return. And of course, we want your voice on the air today. Do give us a call if you have a question, a comment, perhaps a personal story to share with us. The number is 260-452-1185. You can always call us toll-free, of course, at 1-800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall. Or you can always send us a tweet. It's @MiddayMatters. Stay with us. We'll keep the conversation going when we return.
Parents could routinely determine their child's entire genetic blueprint at birth, but do they want to?
Do we wait until she's a specific age and say, oh, by the way, we have all of your DNA. You know, do you want to see what doctors have found? Or do we keep that to ourselves?
The dilemmas of genome sequencing for newborns, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's weekdays starting at 4 on WBOI Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Northeast Indiana Public Radio. I'm Sarah D'Elia with WBOI News. Indiana lawmakers are gauging their time carefully as they weigh when to introduce a measure that would add a ban on same-sex marriage to the state constitution. Lawmakers passed the measure in 2011, but must pass it again in 2013 or 2014 so it can go to voters. Republican House Speaker Brian Bosma said before the election that the measure could move swiftly through his chamber, but he did not include it in a package of ideas House Republicans will push in 2013. Republican Representative Eric Turner led the fight for the measure's passage last year, but has not indicated whether he'll push for it come January. The timing could be influenced by other priorities, including the new two-year budget lawmakers need to write. Indiana school systems that issue iPads to students say they are working to make sure students are using the devices properly and to ease parents' concerns that they may be used to post items on social media or download inappropriate content. East Allen County Schools Director of Accountability Bill Dial says that Apple updated its filtering options, making iPads more secure, but he also says that any district with that type of technology will have problems with students not using the devices for educational purposes only. School administrators say when there are problems, they work to teach the students lessons about why what they did was wrong. Dial says for students who don't follow the rules, schools can essentially turn the tablet into an electronic notebook. Archbishop Joseph W. Tubin will be installed as the sixth leader of the Indianapolis Archdiocese during a special mass at Saints Peter and Paul Cathedral. Catholic leaders from across the country are expected to join with civic leaders at Monday's mass. Tubin was named to the post in October. He succeeds Archbishop Daniel Beeklin, who retired last year. The 60-year-old Tubin was a former high-ranking Holy See official who tried to resolve tense relations between the Vatican and U.S. nuns before his transfer. The Detroit native was ordained in 1978. The Indianapolis Archdiocese has about 225,000 Catholic parishioners in its 39 counties in central and southern Indiana. The Fort Wayne Comets and Mad Ants split last week's games. WBOI's Doug Gruber has the results.
The Comets traveled to Georgia to take on the league-leading Gwinnett Gladiators. Wednesday night, the K's downed Gwinnett 4-3. Friday night, the K's managed only one goal, and Gwinnett used a late empty net goal to down the Comets 3-1. A brawl with 30 seconds left in the game resulted in 114 minutes in penalties to the two teams and a one-game suspension for the K's Lincoln Cayley Schrock for instigating the fray. It was the Comets' sixth loss in their last eight games. The K's now travel to Orlando this coming weekend for three games in three nights. The Fort Wayne Mad Ants won their second game of the season Friday night, downing the Iowa Energy 108-101. After trailing most of the game, the Mad Ants tied the game at 99 with 2 minutes remaining. The Ants' Walker Russell Jr. and Ron Howard made 8 of 9 free throws in the final minute 45 for the Ants' win. Saturday night against the same Energy in the Iowa City, Iowa outscored the Mad Ants 30-11 in the third quarter for an easy 102-88 win. The Mad Ants continue on the road for the next week and a half, traveling to Maine and Canton, returning to the Coliseum December 14th. For WBOI News, I'm Doug Gruber.
You're listening to 89.1 FM WBOI. I'm Sarah D'Elia, and now back to Midday Matters.
It's 12:42, and you're tuned to Midday Matters on WBOI. I'm Sean Beter, along with Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel. On today's program, we're talking poverty, hunger, and homelessness in northeastern Indiana and beyond. And we want to hear from you today. If you have a question for Matt Bell or Ann Helmke, give us a call and share your story, 260-452-1185. Or you can always call us toll-free, of course, 1-800-471-9264. Email MiddayMatters@nipr.fm, or you can always post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. And Bob Kaler, go ahead.
I'd be interested to know what both of our guests think the most important things people can do for themselves and society as a whole can do to help help the poor and the near poor climb into better circumstances and improve their lives.
Well, that's an interesting question. My personal philosophy is that we need to grow people. We need to develop people to levels that they can make higher incomes, be better parents, have better nutrition for their families, be able to not only move to housing, but sustain their housing in a safe, decent way. And I think that by doing that, you have to address several issues with a family who's reached homelessness. But Matt may be dealing with families who, you know, he referred to earlier that are struggling. Just they have a gap. You know, they're not homeless, but they're choosing to either pay rent or buy groceries, or they're choosing to pay medical bills or whatever, you know, whatever's going to keep a roof over their head is what they're struggling with. And I think the food banks really help with that gap.
Mm-hmm. And Matt Bell, same question to you. What does it take?
Well, I think that Anna hit on some really key elements of what it takes to promote growth, you know, from poverty to certainly self-reliance and maybe even to prosperity eventually. From a policy standpoint, I think that as we think about, you know, there's great work that happens in communities and great organizations that do it, but what should that kind of overarching policy structure look like that enables those changes to happen? I think that the challenge that we have from a policy standpoint is making sure that our policies talk to each other, making sure that those things that we're doing to promote healthy families are tied to assistance for housing support, are tied to early childhood education, are tied to you know, assistance for those who are hungry and are in need. And the policy can't exist in silos. It really has to complement each other. And I think that the best opportunity to do that is at a state level, is to recognize that that each state has its unique attributes, has its unique assets, and really to look to our legislators, to look to the executive branch, to look to agency heads in Indianapolis and say, you know, we're willing as a community to support ourselves. Now help create the right framework in which we can do that. Let's make sure that, you know, we're educating people about quality child care and the importance of quality child care, and that we're incenting providers to earn that quality designation, path to quality that says to a parent, your child's going somewhere meaningful. You know, let's make sure that we're tying assistance to women, infants, and children to other programs, housing assistance that will then kind of create that solid foundation that Ann rightly points out so many families are lacking. You know, when you feel like all the walls are crashing around you at once, you know, you spend a lot of time scurrying to push one back up and then the other and then the other. We need to create a policy environment in which we're looking at those folks in those difficult situations, and making sure that policy intersects to best support their needs. And you can't de-emphasize education in that. Training, meeting that middle skill gap that exists today. I mean, it's amazing to me today that we have 5%, 7% of jobs unfilled in manufacturing for lack of available skilled workers at a time when we still have unemployment that's over 7%. And yet that's the fact today, because we have to commit ourselves to educating folks and allowing them a pathway out of that poverty.
And help
you. Yeah. Matt, that is, you're right on target there as far as policy issues go. And one of the things that I've been serving homeless families since 1991, and before that was serving homeless, runaway homeless youth, another big population in our community, by the way, that's underserved. But nonetheless, we have seen policy shift now finally to rapid rehousing instead of, you know, building more shelters and creating more dependents. What the federal government now is moving toward moving families out of shelters as quickly as possible, which has always been the philosophy of Vincent Village, even though we are a transitional shelter, because we want to make sure that a family doesn't move out of the shelter into housing and then become homeless again. But on the other hand, we don't try to keep families in shelters any longer in our shelter, any longer than they need to be there, and move them out into housing so that they're stable, and then provide services while they're in their own place. Is actually more of a strengthening factor to help the family move toward higher levels of self-sufficiency than living in a shelter setting.
You know, and I believe that when our goal is not to keep people as part of a government-supported system, but to equip them and empower them with the skills that they need to move beyond it, we do what's right. And I think that's why organizations like yours and organizations like Community Harvest Food Bank have had such a positive impact on a community, because the goal is not to create a client for life. Rather, the focus is on the client, and it's on the family, and it's on that hungry or homeless person, and making sure that we give them the skills, the opportunity, the education they need to realize the dream that they have for themselves.
Bob Kaler.
Ann, what do you see as over your career with working with families that are homeless and trying to move them into better circumstances? What are the traits or the characteristics that you see in people that make them most likely to be able to take advantage of the opportunities that you're providing?
When we're serving a family that has skills, some skills of their own, and some maybe they're situationally homeless, they tend to have the...
Sorry, situationally homeless. Could you explain that?
The economy. They, you know, had stable housing at one time and then lost their housing, versus someone who, you know, has grown up in generational poverty. And really, I haven't talked to a single homeless person. I've talked to plenty in my career that didn't want to work. So they want people want to work. A lot of them just don't have any idea. We can't hardly relate to this, but if you grew up in the projects or in public housing and you didn't have any role models like a dentist or a lawyer or even a, you know, people who worked around you much, it's really hard for you to understand the just basics of, we're just now collaborating with, I finally got Blue Jackets, which does a career academy for returning offenders, to take their classes to other organizations who serve populations that are struggling. And we just graduated our first class. It's a collaboration speak about collaborations between CANI, Vincent Village, and Genesis Outreach. And we graduated two people. And hopefully there's jobs then at the end of that. But that addresses those basic issues of, go, you know, get up and go to work. If some kind of tragedy hits, call your employer. You know, those kind of things are so important to not only getting into a job, but staying in a job. We help people find jobs that find that, you know, a month or a couple weeks later, they've done something that has terminated the job. Mm-hmm. So,
and I'm sorry I interrupted there, but could you just speak a little more to those personality traits, I guess, that help folks?
Everybody's unique. You know, they have their own set of strengths. We come from a strengths perspective, so we look at a family and try to identify where their strengths are, rather than identifying what, you know, where their weaknesses are, and we start building on those. We use what we call a family development matrix, and then as they're moving forward, they actually have a visible, a tangible look at what their goals are and how they're moving forward on those goals. And those goals may be just like getting up every morning and getting your kids on the bus on time. You know, that might be a start. That might be a start for somebody. Somebody else might be far beyond that, you know. But we just take each family and each day develop their own unique plan for self-sufficiency. We help them do it.
I think particularly as we hopefully, and I think we can feel hopeful that we are moving out of this economic recession, it's important to recognize that when we say, who are the homeless, who are the hungry, there's not a single profile that fits. It's
Thank
not a class
you, Matt.
That's necessarily there by choice, right? you know, there's a lot of, but by the grace of God, go I, to
uh-huh.
that point. You know, you know, folks who have been very economically secure, who now have found themselves out of work for 9 and 12 and 18 and 27 months, bring to the table a different set of personality factors, a different set of motivators, a different set of disappointments and challenges. So I think that it's very difficult to put one face on homelessness, on hunger, and on poverty. And I believe very much that organizations like ANZ, like Community Harvest Food Bank, begin by rekindling, by nurturing, and by speaking to the innate dignity that each person has. Whether it's been through generational poverty, whether it's been through, you know, an economic crisis or catastrophe, a health crisis, a family loss, if we begin with the principle of dignity and help people recognize that within themselves, that they add value just by virtue of being, then we have the opportunity to help folks get on a path that leads them to a better place through education, you know, through dealing with ancillary issues. Maybe it's money management. Maybe there are behaviors that need to be addressed. Maybe it's breaking those long-standing cycles of poverty. But I think that for me, the foundation is dignity. How do we recognize it? How do we nurture it? And how do we build it in folks across our community? When we do, folks can do great things for themselves with our assistance.
We just have about 5 minutes left in the program here. I do think we're going to forego our normal break and run to up to 1 o'clock here. And we do want to invite our listeners to get their voices in under the wire. If you have a question, a comment, perhaps a personal story, the number 260-452-1185. You can post on our Facebook page or send us an email. It's middaymatters@nipr.fm. Before we have to leave the program here, Matt Bell, we were talking a bit over one of the breaks here about, you know, we've talked about parents with children who are struggling to get by, and mentioned runaways. But Matt, one issue that you mentioned over this break is senior poverty as well. Last I saw, senior poverty rate was around 11%. Can you tell us just a little bit about kind of the unique circumstances that seniors face, you know, where they may be on a fixed income, other issues like that?
Sure, and I think that the issue of hunger in a senior community is one that unfortunately demonstrates to us that this is not a challenge that will go away as we continue to see a population that ages very quickly. But we know that there are seniors throughout our community who live on a fixed income, who regularly make choices between, you know, can I afford my medication this month or can I eat? You know, as we've seen savings accounts absolutely decimated, pensions decimated, 401k plans decimated, we know that this will continue to be a tremendous challenge for us. You know, Community Harvest Food Bank tries to address that in a number of ways, certainly through our Senior Pack program, in which grocery bags are packed and delivered by volunteers to homebound older adults living on fixed and low incomes every 2 weeks. But again, I think it just underscores that this is not whatever positive change we want to see in our community. The hunger touches every element of our society, from the youngest to the oldest, from those who have been secure to the most vulnerable. But seniors certainly are a population that is impacted, and unfortunately will continue to be as we move forward.
Just a few minutes left in the program here. Some folks chatting about the issue on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/MiddayMatters. We had a message from Holly. Holly says this is such a timely topic because of all the need, not only in the community, but around the world. Her organization, Catherine Casper Place, runs the Fresh Food Initiative, which provides refugees and immigrants with land and tools to grow their own culturally appropriate food gardens. Fortunately for many of them, living in apartment complexes often prevents them from growing food at home, so access to farms is imperative. Wouldn't it be an amazing economic development tool if Fort Wayne followed in the footsteps of Chicago and Phoenix and New York and Madison, Wisconsin, by creating strategies for the many brownfields and unused green spaces to become urban farms and community gardens? Ann Helmke, a lot of folks have a lot of ideas on how to tackle the issue.
Exactly, and you know that we actually have our own raised gardens, vegetable gardens, organic gardens, and just finished a fundraiser called A Place at Our Table for the organization, which used all locally grown and locally sourced food for the event. And about seven of our families in Vincent Village raise their own vegetables. I think it's a trend. I fully agree that it's a wonderful way to get the family on track with learning more about nutrition and how important it is to have those vegetables and fresh produce in their diet. That's something that a lot of people in poverty and homelessness can't afford. It's expensive to go buy fresh produce.
Mm-hmm. And we're just about out of time here, but Matt Bell, I'm sure this is not the first time but you've heard ideas like this either. And of course, you know, poverty stretches across just about every issue you can think of, but a lot of folks thinking outside the box to tackle the issue.
You know, it's a great example of where innovation and where real solutions come from. And those come from people who live in communities and want to see those communities improve. You know, to solve this problem, we don't need to wait on a federal program, and we don't need to wait on a state program. And in fact, you know, those may work against ultimately addressing this program, this challenge in the best way. It's about people with ideas who look around their community and say, well, can't we leverage that space? Well, what if we utilized this resource or tied these two organizations together? It's a wonderful idea. You know, it's why we take a farm wagon across the Northeast Indiana region in two trucks each week, travel throughout our service area with donations of fresh produce and other perishables to folks in rural and urban areas.
And Matt Bell, we're going to have to cut the conversation there. We've reached the end of the program. But Matt Bell and Helmke, thank you both so much for being with us on Midday Matters today.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Bob Kaler, thank you so much as well. Thanks to our listeners for calling in and commenting. I'm Sean Beter. This is WBOY Fort Wayne. We're coming up on 1 o'clock.